I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Welcome to the Believe Knicks podcast. Matthew Miranda joined by Stacey Patton on a very nice day in Knicksville. The Knicks are the hottest thing this side of the atmosphere. I think they've won 6 out of 7 games now, 8-5. After an initial loss on this 5-game road trip in Boston, which is certainly a forgivable sin. Win, win, win after that. And now the Knicks are heading into a tough stretch of games for about a week. A tough stretch of 3 games. But before we get into what has passed and what may be coming, a reminder, the last of the major pro sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. I cannot believe, if you're not old, if you're not of a certain age, you may never understand how weird it is to be reading a commercial that openly says the last of the major pro sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. And let me give you a free tip. If you want to bet on the NHL, whatever the Rangers line is, take the Rangers. They are destroying everybody. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. All the hoops betting action, along with every sport available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access anytime. Head to the BetOnline today and remember, I don't know why it says the, head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Stacey Patton, where does the pod start? We can literally pick any single position for the Knicks. We can talk about consecutive wire-to-wire wins. There are children alive on this planet who have never known the New York Knicks to be behind in a basketball game. where do we start in our discussion today?
Well, shout out to those children. Welcome to the world. You put a great recap up on Strickland about the Knicks Hornets game, which discussed things that shouldn't be ignored with respect to Miles Bridges and the larger domestic violence policy of the NBA. I'd like to give you a chance to kind of talk about it, and as well, not just raising kind of awareness, but you know what we can do to help, right? So, I'd like to start the episode to give you a chance to talk about that.
So I had completely somehow, in all the reading about Bridges and discussions about Bridges and the statement that the Hornets put out recently about Bridges and the fact that he played the prior game, I can't remember who it was against, maybe Milwaukee. Somehow it just, I don't know if I blocked it out or what, but it never sunk into my brain as the Knicks lined up to play the Hornets that Bridges was going to play. So I'm recapping the game. I'm taking notes. I'm kind of paying attention at a normal distance. My head is somewhere else, and I realize that the ball just went to someone who looks like Miles Bridges, and Mike Breen is saying Bridges, and Miles Bridges is playing. And there's a lot here, so I want to be very specific about, like, I'm just talking about what I'm talking about. The fact that I'm talking about X does not mean that I don't care about Y. It's just there's so much to talk about, and, like, I can only talk about so much, like, at a time. I wanted to be really, because I think this is what mattered to me coming out of the game, and it's what I would like people hopefully to take away from Bridges playing, watching the game. One is in the recap and in general, like, I don't want the emphasis to be on Bridges. Bridges is one person. Bridges has clearly, like, issues to work with and work on. And things to answer for, but I didn't want to make it like, I'm not demonizing Miles Bridges. He is a part of this. It's a much larger thing than Miles Bridges, but this is emblematic of a larger conversation that has to be had. And where it really, really kicked off for me was I thought for like most of the first half that LaMelo Ball was playing with an AirPod, like in his ear. And I was thinking like, yeah. Okay, like if I could, handful of players I could see playing with an AirPod, LaMelo Ball would be one of them. And then I noticed that's not an AirPod, that's something. And then they, of course, say on the broadcast that LaMelo Ball has a cover over a tattoo near his left ear because it has the initials, I think LF or LM, some initials, and it's for his clothing fashion line. And like you can't not be smacked in the face by this juxtaposition that the NBA will not allow you to see the sight of ink on the body of a player because advertising is like sacrosanct to them. And I'm watching Miles Bridges play a couple of weeks after I'm trying to explain to someone why Kevin Porter Jr. got traded instead of simply like cut by Houston, while I'm reminded like, oh yeah, Josh Primo, I just learned details of that case. I hadn't known. And again, it's not about each of these individuals, but it's the fact that to see the league take the immediate action they do on LaMelo Ball, to see the league rightfully, I think, but punitively take the action they did on Draymond Green, I would have been fine with Draymond getting more than what he got. But I don't think the league did it because this was a chance to address an injustice. The league came down because Draymond is villain number one. And this is very similar to when Dennis Rodman was in Chicago, where this isn't just a player.
And he's done it a bunch. I mean,
it's not just a player acting out. It's also a player.
He also choked out a guy. And the only reason I think it was as low as it was and why NBA Twitter was like, it's because I want to add this. There is definitely a xenophobic element to NBA fandom. And, you know, it's one thing to criticize Gobert for his play. There is, with him and some of it with Wemby, like, so it's like, oh, he choked him out. He can't do that. That's a very dangerous play. And it's like he's kicked people in the balls. Like Draymond, Ron Artest fought a fan and lost his season. I think that's what I'm judging this on. And Draymond has endangered NBA players without any, there's no reason to do that. You're not protecting a teammate. You're choking somebody out. from the back like a coward, because I don't think he would stand a chance against Rudy Gobert face to face. So, you know, I'll let you finish, but I think that that suspension should have been more severe.
Yeah, agreed. No, agreed 100%. And Draymond is at the point, and this is why I immediately was like, I'm done personally with this player. Is you saw it with his bonus incident last year. You saw it not just in the action against the player, but in his egging on of the crowd right after it happened. You saw it. If you saw the faces of the people who were coming after Draymond to stop him right when he went at Gobert, you could see it on all of them. There's an understanding that for this particular individual, it's not simply a case. This isn't just like a cartoonish villain like Grayson Allen, who like gets in cheap shots a lot. There's always the possibility of escalation with this person. And if everyone around him was not so like hardwired against it, it would have happened by now. All of these scenarios are cases where,
to me, it's more Lambeer than Rodman, for what it's worth. Like, Rodman did his own shit, but to your point, it was Lambeer who made it a team-wide thing, right?
Key distinction with Rodman, like when Rodman did this stuff, I think Rodman was always on some level like at the wheel. Even if it was an immediate spontaneous decision, like Rodman was doing it because on some level, like Rodman was in control and wanted to do this. The thing with Green, to me, is I feel like there's no one at the wheel when these things happen, and that's why there's a different risk element with him than when other people have it. And I think you see it in the people around him. You see the Jordan Poole footage. Like, that's not a person who's just hot-headed. Like, that's a person who cannot judge in a situation. And I'm not judging how he's come by this, because different people can come by this for different reasons.
And it's not, by the way, Draymond's one of the more intelligent players. I think he'll have a future in broadcasting. Very intelligent guy. So this isn't a comment on that, but yeah, to your point, he definitely seems to lose control at times.
Yeah, there's a trigger. So Draymond on that level, that's a whole different thing. Miles Bridges, though, but tying it back to Bridges, recognizing the league's, you know, aggression in, we have to do something about this. Like, we're going to come down hard. Like, and if anyone has a problem with it, like, they can, you know, the union can take us to court or something, but like, we have to take action on this. And LaMelo Ball has advertising on his body that we didn't profit off of. We have to take action on that. But a player who returned from his suspension and year of counseling and the first year of probation and all of this after treatment that was conditional to him having three felonies brought against him in the initial arrest and not even go to jail for it. To have that player come back, talk in the summer after signing a 1-year, $8 million qualifying offer about, I've been focusing on being the best person I can be, conspicuous in his comments. And I realize, like, Miles Bridges is not one of my college students. Like, it's not a rhetorical analysis assignment. He just put out a statement. But seeing in the statement who he addresses, not a single word toward the victim, not a single indication of ideas. Everything is about he's sad for embarrassing his family. Like, he makes a comment about, you know, I'm still the same kid I was 5 years ago. You would hope that no one is the same person after 5 years that they were. But even if we want to take him, like, you know, on a figurative level, for that person in July to be making those comments, and then in October for that person to be charged again with another offense, another violent assault, this time violating the protective custody or the protective order, damaging the car, being accused of destroying the windshield, denting the windows, to have that happen in October, to then in November, to after the incident, to have Adam Silver talking about how the league is doing everything that, you know, it can and should do, and we take this seriously, of course, to a couple weeks later, the Hornets are saying, yeah, we're he's back. We're comfortable with him coming back. Last time he's on my TV playing. How do you explain, and domestic violence, significant on two levels, it wildly disproportionately impacts women, and also it does not only impact women. Like, this impacts everybody. So when you talk about the NBA's audience, this potentially impacts everyone. And the league is telling these people, you can trust, like Adam Silver says, if anyone crosses the line, we're on it. So by those standards, Miles Bridges still hasn't crossed the line. Kevin Porter, someone who has had more than one incident of questionable violence, he was not. Also, Silver could have put him on leave, has the power to do it, whether a player has been convicted or not, charged or not, on trial or not. So by Silver's own standards, none of this has crossed the line. So what is the line?
Does it cost you money? That's the line.
You can't take that. You can't take that seriously. And it's, you know, you understand that it happens. Everyone understands that it happens. Not just in sports, it's a social, it's endemic to humanity. It's gone on for all of our history.
I mean, for our New York fans, I mean, you could see the allegations against P. Diddy, which got settled, were disgusting. You know, I grew up listening to his music. Mm-hmm. And these were years of abuse and control. And it's a pretty widespread problem, especially among people with power. Predominantly men with power.
So you don't want the focus to be on Bridges because it's bigger than him, but you also don't want, you know, in a broadcast last night, and God knows, like, I wasn't expecting MSG to be like, let's have the difficult conversation. But the extent of any recognition that potentially something awkward was happening on our screen was Bridges catching and throwing down one alley-oop and Mike Breen being decidedly less emphatic than he usually is when a player puts an alley-oop. Wally Szczerbiak sounded like Bridges had been out with like the cold for 2 weeks, like absolutely zero recognition of anything. And again, I imagine they are. And I was not tuning in and thinking like Mike Breen and Wally Szczerbiak better be. I'm not saying that either. But you know, it's hard to see it and reconcile, like.
And for people,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I it's definitely really tough. And for you know, for all of our listeners who may have dealt with something like this, very, very tough, I'm sure, to see this. Matt, I think your article ended though, and I think you wanted to mention that this is not just complaining in the dark or crying about the dark. For people who are concerned about domestic violence and helping victims, I think you posted some resources. Do you want to share them here?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, they're on the recap. If you go to the Strickland, the Strick.land, it's at the end of the recap. But also, just to summarize in general, if you're someone who is experiencing this, there are like options. You do have the ability to get help. It can seem completely like you're stuck where you are in a situation. And I have personally known, being in an environment where it's not a healthy environment for you, it's harmful, and you don't feel like you really can say anything because you're so worried about what the repercussions will be if the person finds out, or if the person you trust doesn't help you or can't help you. But you have to take that first step, like, to get out of where you are. It can't get fixed from inside. This isn't something that you can fix, and it's not something that you can fix from inside. So if you're someone who's experiencing it, there's resources you can help that can help you that are available state by state, county by county. There's a link on the website from the National Network for Ending Domestic Violence. There are resources available as far as education. There are resources also at these sites that link very easily to places where you can find the ability to contribute, the ability to donate resources, time. There were some notes included at the end of the recap about some of the, you know, a lot of times when people donate to any kind of a shelter or hunger drive or something, they just dump. This is, again, not a condemnation. Help is help. But a lot of people will put, you know, leftover stuff in your closet that you don't want, or certain pantry staples. But a lot of these shelters will point out that they're not funded, especially these days, they're not funded for long-term assistance for women and children in need, or people who are trying to, you know, start over from being in a domestic violence situation. So certain things you might not think of, like bread, like can openers are really significant. They get a lot of canned goods, but if they don't have a can opener, it's not a pop top, that doesn't really help them. Dish detergent, feminine hygiene products, they get a lot of packages of like birthday cake, but they don't have flour, they don't have sugar, salt, spices, things like that. Eggs are considered like a really like a great thing. So, you know, try to be attentive, ask questions always. Just, you know, recognize that what you can do is something. And a lot of times, like, something for people who have nothing is a lot. So you can check the article. There's links there. There's links also you can find very easily to where you can push for legislative action, for changing laws, changing that the way the programs are funded and prioritized. You should educate yourself on what your local politician is or is not doing in terms of that kind of work, and see where the next step is that you can take from there.
Yeah. All said, and you know, we hope that, we just like to hope that anyone going through these kind of things is, we can do more to help them. And we hope that the NBA will, you know, eventually evolve. And but it's clear this is an example of some of the hypocrisy that is kind of that you see a lot. And, you know, without getting into commentary on the larger climate and the world we live in, and how incentives can be nakedly really bad. It's definitely worth talking about. I did want to shift, unless there's anything else you wanted to add, Matt, on this. Did want to start to talk a little bit about the Knicks. So the Knicks are 8-5. They've just beaten two teams that we'd expect them to beat, in Charlotte and
Washington.
The Wizards, yeah. After a pretty tough win against the Hawks. After a very tough opening stretch, they've faced some teams that they're, you know, and they've won. And the Knicks are doing quite well. They're actually 7th in 3-point percentage, 8th in 3-point attempt rate. They're 10th in offensive rating, 5th in net rating, 4th in defensive rating, which is a big improvement. For all of the talk about how good they were last year, being a Tibbs team, you'd expect defense is the core. They're actually 3rd in offensive rating last year and 19th in defensive rating. So they've actually they're playing at a really high level right now, despite the fact that 8-5 may not completely reflect that. So Matt, just want to kick it to you. What are your kind of thoughts overall? Do you think people were maybe panting a little bit early in the season when the record wasn't that great, but they're obviously playing good teams? And
I think, yes, people were panicking, but on one level, I embraced that, because for people to be panicking in the opening games of a Knicks season against the schedule that they faced is indicative on some level of, like, the aspiration people have for the team. The real Chicken Littles were annoying, but, like, I like the fact that, like, there's a lot of seasons you're not invested from game one in with, like, a night in, night out result, because it matters that much to your team. I thought that was exciting and that was cool. Stacey, are you familiar offhand with the 2004 New York Jets?
Is it Vinny Testaverde?
No, a little later. These are your Chad Pennington.
Pennington? Okay.
Curtis Martin, Santana Moss, New York Jets. Now, I am no longer...
Herm Edwards, the coach? Or...
Yes. Yeah. So... The Jets, even before I got into the Knicks, I was following the Jets. And thankfully, I stopped with that about 10 years ago. But for a long time, I was like a Jets fan. And it's interesting to me, and I think we'll talk about this with some Knicks stuff later too. Like, when you become a fan really can determine the kind of mindset that you bring to your fandom. It's really striking that if I'm a Met fan who came before they won in 86. So I'm usually a very optimistic Met fan, because the first year I watched them, they had this miracle run to a World Series. So my assumption as a Met fan by default is that things will always work out, which I've realized makes me different than most Met fans that I know, because most of them now came after 86 and they haven't seen the team win. Same thing with the Knicks. If you grew up watching this team in the 90s, you have, I think, a different opinion about them, or a different sense of yourself as a fan, than if you started watching them when, like, you know, Isaiah Thomas was running things. So the Jets have never, ever, ever, ever been really good. They won the Super Bowl literally in 1969, I think, and ever since then have just not been good. So all Jet fans share that, I think, as a cultural thing. So when the 04 Jets, their season went along, I was really struck that I was watching this team that, like, if you objectively stood back and didn't notice the uniforms, but just watched the play, this was a team that could win. Like, this was a team that could win a Super Bowl. You couldn't compute that with Jets, but, like, it was true. And as the season went along, I began telling people, and, like, I was the farthest thing from a, like, a rabid, you know, I'm a Jet. If you're a Jet fan, you're a natural cynic. But I was like, I'm telling you, this team, this is legit. Like, this team can do it. They had the running back and Martin. You know, Pennington didn't make mistakes. He was highly efficient. Moss gave them a little explosiveness. They had some good defensive players. Lamont Jordan's a great backup. They get to the playoffs. They play Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, I think, was like 15-1 that year. And they're heavy, heavy, heavy favorites. And no one won. No one even wins at Heinz Field. And the Jets are big underdogs. And it was the most brutal day of my life as a Jet fan because I was working. I was a delivery driver. I was driving around food, listening to the Jets lose a game by 3 points, I think in overtime, in a game where their kicker, Doug Bryan, missed 3 field goals when they could have won the game. And my father kept calling me because he was all, and we are dying with this game. And what was so brutal was it wasn't just a loss, but it was like, but you don't understand. Like, this was the team. Like, this was really, 97 Knicks have a hint of that. Like, this was the team. So this year, one thing that's been really striking about these Knicks is that if I step back from the names and the resumes and all of my normal senses of floors and ceilings, and I just look at what it is that I am seeing a team that, like, I have to take seriously. I'm seeing a team that with, like, one or two breaks, I think can get to the finals. And I did not come into the season thinking, for me coming into the season, my sense of success was just do what you did last year. Like, win in the high 40s, get to the second round, be competitive. That will show me sustainability, which is a big thing with this franchise. But, like, that's all I need. And, you know, some years your team gets off to a certain start and things change, positively or negatively, and your expectations shift. And now I would say my expectations have shifted, but my sense of their ceiling is definitely climbing. And I didn't think that would happen 13 games into the season. But even when they were losing, you could see, like, they weren't losing because they didn't have answers. They were losing because just things weren't happening that normally happen. But now that those things are happening more, this is some team.
Yeah, and I think we're all dealing a little bit with the curse of expectations. The last couple of years really have been very unprecedented for me. I've been a Michigan fan since 2007. My first game as a student, they were ranked number 5 in the country, one of the contenders for the national championship. They lost to a team nobody had heard of from Appalachian State. Then they hired a new coach and were fucking dog shit for a few years. And even after hiring Jim Harbaugh, it took a long time. And so the last 3 years, the last 2 years before this week, and this week they play Ohio State again. But the last 2 years, they beat the crap out of Ohio State. This seemed to me, you have to understand, this would be like the Knicks sweeping this version of the Celtics in four games, or beating, right, you know, if the Knicks at their peak somehow had beaten LeBron, the Heatles, right? That was just something that was just a myth to me. It's not supposed to be. It's historically supposed to be an even rivalry. At the same time, the Philadelphia Eagles, I've seen them win a Super Bowl in the last few years. The last 2 years, and on the strict court, you can say every game, I'm just constantly, the Eagles are 8-1. They're the best team by most people's standards. They'll play tomorrow night against the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll see how that goes. But the thing is, they, you know, these teams have become so good. And that's without talking about the fact that this is the most success I've seen from the Knicks since I was in grade school, by a large.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this is there. I have not seen a team this good since the 99 Knicks, at least.
Shout out to the 2000 Knicks, who everybody overlooks. And I get it because I do it too. But, like, they were a pretty good team, the 2000 Knicks.
The 2000 Knicks were good. This Knicks team is sweeping them. The 2012 Knicks were good. This Knicks team is
sweeping them.
What did you see what Roy Hibbert did to Carmelo Anthony? What do you think Mitchell Robinson's doing? Mitchell Robinson is 10 times the fucking player that Roy Hibbert was.
No, wait, hold on. I'm talking about the 2000 Knicks, not the 2000. So wait, where's Roy's? You're saying, wait, you're saying Mitch will be more destructive of Ewing than Hibbert was of Chandler?
I went on to the 2012 Knicks.
Okay.
I think Ewing would have success. I also think Mitch has shown that unless you can shoot the three against him, like he even did well against Jokic the last time he played them. The only guy who's really been consistently putting up numbers has been Porzingis. If you're a post-oriented player, like I'm not worried about Mitch. Are you worried about Mitch against Carl? I'm not. Sorry, I don't want to compare Carl Anthony Towns to Ewing. But an aged Ewing against this version of Mitchell Robinson, who's guarding Brunson on that team?
Charlie Ward. Yeah,
I'll take that. This is a guy who's dropped 44 on Drew Holiday. This is a guy who went against Eric Spoelstra and averaged well over 30 for a series. Our bench is better. This is the most complete. And even if you want to say head to head, they don't sweep the 2000 Knicks against other teams. Like the only team I really am worried about right now is Boston. That's because probably I'm overreacting to the fact that Milwaukee hasn't looked gangbusters, but there are real structural problems with that team. They have two of the top 10 players in the NBA, one of the top three players in the NBA. So in a series, there's a good chance none of that matters, and especially as they continue to gel. But so the point I was making is, though, is like the last 3 years, I've seen unprecedented success for my teams.
Yeah.
But then when you expect greatness, the vast majority of outcomes on any kind of reasonable distribution is negative, right? And this is a universally human thing. Go to a Spurs blog a few years ago, right now maybe not, but even during the Popovich era, after a tough loss, you would see fire Popovich comments. If you went to a Patriots blog, right, they lost the game they weren't supposed to. Belichick doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, all these things, right? If you go to an Alabama or a Georgia blog now, there is only disappointment or met expectations. And so I've had to remind myself with the Knicks that it's like, enjoy the ride, right? Like, And that was why that COVID season was so fun, because it was completely unexpected. We went on that 9-game winning streak. Yeah. Everything was upside. That's why the following year was even more stressful than maybe it should have been. And that's why, like, really – and now where we're at is, I would say, more less than cautious optimism, but they need to do something, right? So I think with the Knicks right now, it's – and I think the other part of this is why so many of the conversations turn to, like, you know, very binary – choices is that it's like, well, if we're not competing for a title, what are we doing? Right? Like, you know, yeah, you re-signed Mitch instead of drafting Jalen Duren, but you know, Duren could end up being Bam maybe in 3 years. But if you're not going to win a title today, and I think that one, because of how the draft has changed, because of how tanking and like the benefits have changed, it's a little bit behind the times. And two, like, we probably underestimate how much linear growth matters. To get back to it, this is just a team where everyone hasn't, like, Grimes is the guy who's gotten a lot of grief. We can talk about Grimes and whether DiVincenzo should be starting. DiVincenzo played well, really well last night. Grimes is shooting 40% from three. So if I told you before the season, people were saying, should we bench Quentin Grimes? And he was shooting 40% from three, 60% true shooting. It's only 8 points per game, but he's shooting 11.6 3-point attempts for 100 possessions. In comparison, Fournier has been about 12 for his career. So Grimes is getting up a ton of threes. He's shooting them at 40%. He's usually guarding the other team's best player. And that's who we're disappointed about. And maybe he has been the most disappointing, because who else, like, everyone has. RJ Barrett has taken leaps that I've been a cautious optimist with RJ Barrett. I think he'd be shooting 40% from three, consistently making the right decisions, being a really good defender. In fact, I think if you were to put DiVincenzo in for Grimes, the reason that could work is because RJ has been so good on defense, guarding the best player, clearly very impactful. Emmanuel quickly has gotten a lot better from last year. This is a little bit quieter, but shooting efficiently from outside. The floater is just unstoppable. His passing has taken a leap.
He looks like he's put it all together. Like, when not just the results, but just watching the way he moves and conducts himself. Like, he looks like, all right, like, he figured it out.
4 for 11 last night for 9 points. I don't think he had that bad a game, you know? So everyone has improved, and that is that has been the real theme over the last 3 years, right? It's that, like, Mitch and RJ took a step back 2021, so did Randall shaping up. Like, that's the thing, they're 8-5, and Randall and Brunson have been their most up and down players, right? Mm-hmm. But they're both starting to pick it up, and the schedule's been tough. So so can they win it all? I think Boston is a juggernaut right now, to be honest. I think there's a reason we lost by 16 the last time. Yeah, we didn't have RJ, but Porzingis, Tatum together seems like a pretty difficult problem to solve. But anyone else, you know, like the league is a mess. Like,
let's say it's late May, and at the end of a first round sweep of whoever they're playing, Drew Holiday, he messes up his knee. So the Knicks are going to play the Bucks in the next round. But now, I'm sorry, not Drew. Jesus, Lillard. Lillard messes up his ankle going into the next round. Can the Knicks beat the Bucks if they don't have Drew Damian Lillard? Yeah, they can. And then if that team gets to the next round against the Celtics, what's that?
I think they can beat them with Damian Lillard. They should have won the last game we played against them, by the way.
I think the Bucks are a tough matchup, but I think what you're saying, I agree with, is the point is the Bucks are not, whatever your feelings are, they're not an insurmountable climb. And even if Boston is, which I feel like they're clearly the best team in the East. Maybe in the league because the way they all defend. But if you get to now June and Porzingis is out because he's not healthy, and Drew Holiday turns his ankle at the end of the second round, can you that's the thing. And I think interestingly enough, this Knicks team to me has a quality that the Van Gundy teams definitely had, and that the Spoelstra Heat also have, where I think this is the kind of team that when it hits a certain level of quality, it's a problem for everybody. Like, it's not like the Heat are the kind of team that, like, if they're at a certain level of quality, no matter who the opponent is, they're sticky. Like, you're not just going to usually run them off the floor. And I feel like the Knicks, because of the things that they do so well, and it's not just, I think there's a stereotype, because it's the most striking facet of the Knicks statistically is this is an incredible rebounding team, like astonishing, amazing rebounding team. And we don't think of rebounding as a skill, even though what's interesting with this Knicks team, this is not a 90s Knicks team with Ewing, Oakley, Mason, Xavier McDaniel, Charles Smith.
They have one wing. Strong. They have one wing in RJ. I mean, you want to consider Randall a wing, fine, but like everyone else is either 6'5 or a big. No, like
they have three bigs. They have three bigs who play in the whole roster, and they're still dominant. And everyone they bring in is incredible. So it's not just okay, they're a really good rebounding team, because sometimes teams are really good at rebounding because they can't shoot. So there's a lot of rebounds available. But on this team, not only is the percentage that they draw, but if you look right now, other than Randall, who's still creeping up, if you look at the three-point percentage of all the Knicks rotation players, other than Mitch and Hartenstein, who don't shoot them, everybody pretty much, I think Quickly's 37, DiVincenzo's around, he's close to 40. Grimes is 40. Brunson doesn't miss a three ever. RJ's fallen to like 47. Everybody is succeeding. Randall's is still getting up there. But the point is, it's a team that has incredible like physicality and toughness, but in an unconventional way.
And they're getting out with volume too, by the way. They're taking the eighth most attempts per possession. So it's not like
they're really. And again, if this wasn't the Knicks, if you took off the label and just looked at, again, that aspect, like incredible rebounding team, incredible defensive team, high volume three-point shooting team, shoots very well. I think they're now like seventh or something in the league in three-point percentage. Like all those factors, all NBA caliber point guard, two-time, like everything, if they weren't the Knicks.
Potential sixth man of the year, potential most improved player at the wing, and maybe an all-star in RJ Barrett.
Historic center,
NBA player at power forward, who we're mentioning as an afterthought, you know, like all the great back, probably the best backup center in the NBA. Like, there was a stat from an EPM, like, I think Hartenstein is fifth or sixth in the league in defense, like defensive impact. Like, there isn't a weak spot in this rotation right now.
No, and that's the thing. You can lose. Yes, it was the Wizards and the Hornets, but the Knicks lost. And this is another thing for the DiVincenzo, like, overreaction. One of his starts, he did play in a game where RJ was also out, which meant that Josh Hart was starting, which meant DiVincenzo was basically the third option on offense in that game, because alongside Mitch and Hart, he's probably the most creative player after Randall and Brunson, if you have to like take it down to that level. But for them to lose these starters, they didn't miss. It wasn't like two hard-fought wins, you know, that they led wire to wire with both of them gone, because, and again, we don't think Knicks, but you've had a coach here long enough, a front office, a culture, a system. What was striking with Grimes and Barrett out watching the game was it still just looked like the Knicks were doing that thing that they do that like grinds teams down. It happened to be other players doing it in different proportion, but they just looked like a team that this is our system. This is what we do. We do it so well. You can't stop us. And it was striking watching it.
Yeah. And before that, I guess you want to take a side note as well. Is it funny to you at all that like, besides the bad thing that happened, they have basically dominated the Atlanta Hawks since Randall and Tibbs, since Tibbs got here. Like, Trae Young has a massively losing record. Randall himself, like, that's the biggest thing, because if you look at that regular season before we played them, Randall had, I think he had 42 one game against the Hawks. He destroyed the Hawks, and they had no one who could guard him. And then, you know, the playoffs happened, whatever, but they beat the Hawks without RJ before that. And that felt like a game where the Knicks played their C-plus game. Yeah, like, this is, like, who's really dominating this team? Like, everyone's talking, like, they're not even the best record in the East. Like, people talking about, I want to see them get Indiana. I want to see Obi Toppin try to guard you. There have been many times in my career, you have been more of the Randall apologist than me. I will say that I have, and I still have concerns about Randall. I pray that they put Obi on Randall, because I'm sure that we're going to see what Tibbs probably saw in many practices, which is, yeah, we'll see.
I'll take Obi over Randall in transition, but if it's in the half court.
Yeah, and they have Miles Turner there, but like, I'm not, you know.
They're welcome to it. They're welcome to it.
I'm worried about Milwaukee because they have two of the best players that are watched. I'm worried about Boston because they're a great team. Even when we played them, the first game we probably should have won. They still default a lot to Jason Tatum having to play like Kobe Bryant at the end of games. And he's done it, and he's capable. He's a great player. He can do it. But if that's what it took to beat us both times, just him hitting insane shots. Maybe later on in the year, they'll figure out how to get KP more involved. I've never, like Drew, I haven't been worried about either of the times we played them. He's been forced into some pretty terrible turnovers. I'm not worried about Derek White on offense. This is still a team that I think the Knicks can, you know, if they're just going to rely on Tatum, I actually have more confidence in – I wouldn't go that far. I think Tatum is a better player, obviously, on offense than Jalen Brunson, but I think we can match them. In that game, I think the second game, you know, we didn't have RJ, but I think Brunson just wasn't aggressive enough, to be honest, and I think Randall played well. That's where my conversations are. Can we, like, how do we figure out Boston?
Right.
I haven't watched enough of Philly. Max is playing awesome. I also think we would just, I'm going to take, you know, Nurse is a great coach. We'll see what happens. I'm going to trust Tibbs to come up with good strategies against Joel Embiid. And then if it comes to, you know, a guy in Emmanuel Quickley's draft class playing great, but ultimately if that's what we're going up against, you know, I think we can beat Philly. And there ain't anybody else in the East that's really worrisome. The Hawks? We know we've learned that lesson, I think.
There's always Miami, you know.
I don't want to.
I don't fear Miami, but
I'm not going to use the word fluke.
There's always Miami.
The nicest thing I can say about that series last year is that I won't use the word fluke.
But what if they matched up again and Duncan Robinson looks like this year's Duncan Robinson and not last year's? Would that make any difference to you?
No, we're going to torch him on defense this year. Quickly was hurt last year. RJ has played well, but is much better. They still have no answers for Jalen Brunson. The best answer they had is in LA right now. I think that, you know, Bam is still an amazing player. I didn't think Jimmy was that great against us, to be honest. The Knicks, the Heat shot really well from three. two of the guys who shot really well from three, again, are no longer wearing Miami uniforms. And if the Heat want to play Duncan
Hero Robinson, back.
What?
They do have Hero back for some of those threes, which they didn't have last year.
So on that note, and you mentioning Duncan Robinson, I expect the Knicks to have much more offensive success. Mm-hmm. I would love to see Tyler Hero guard. Shit, he can't even guard Deuce McBride, all right? He's not guarding Quickly. He's not guarding Jalen Brunson. He's not guarding RJ Barrett.
I'll take him down low. Yeah.
So, and some of this is my Heat hatred coming out, and they still play well. So that's, like I said, for me, the nicest thing I can personally say is that it wasn't a fluke last year. But I'm pretty confident that the Knicks are a significantly better team. And if we lose the Heat this year and there aren't injuries, I would put it squarely on Tibbs, because this team shouldn't lose the Heat.
I feel confident that at some point Hollywood has made a rom-com where a couple of friends decide to like date, maybe like to make someone else jealous, to make another couple jealous. And as the film goes on, the two friends realize that like they're actually perfect for each other. Like it's such a, and I mentioned this because I saw someone the other day mention talking about Quickly and talking about potential contract negotiations. And it was someone at The Athletic saying that they thought the conversation would start around now 4 years and 120. Somebody just got a deal like that, and they had Quickly now in that kind of $30 million
a year. Sell, right?
No,
it wasn't a big deal. Or you?
I don't think I can remember who it was about. Maybe Vassell. It was a young player getting that sort of a deal, and I thought for a second, I'm like, well, that sucks because you know they can't pay all these guys and get a star, and then I started thinking, like, can they just keep doing what they're doing and have it be fine? Like, for a couple reasons. One, like, no front office in any sport is ever going to say, we have no interest in getting better. Like, obviously, if it goes without saying that if an opportunity came along to make a move that improves a team, every team is going to do that, and most fan bases are going to support that. Like, that goes without saying. But seeing the intangible qualities of a team that has been, like, grown together and has continuity together and has been developed and come along together, and a player like Quickly is really emblematic of this. Like, Manuel Quickly is not probably ever going to be the best player on a championship team. That's probably, like, never going to happen. And you might say, like, well, if you can get us someone who can do that, like, go for it. But watching him play, there is some non-numerical value that comes with seeing this person, seeing Mitch, seeing potentially what RJ is doing, like seeing these things happen. If I held on to this core and the next 4 years, the Knicks make it to at least the second round every year, they get to a conference finals, losing seven tough games, is that okay? Like, is that worse than on taking a shot like what Phoenix is doing now, and you've got a couple years to make it? I don't not to make it a binary, but I'm just trying to get to like how we view success, given that as fans, although we all want to see our team win a title, that's not why I think most of us follow the team, because if we did, you probably would have given up like a while ago, because this team hasn't won one since Richard Nixon was not a criminal. Like, that's a long. So that's probably not.
Probably what, means they'd never won that, to be honest.
You know what I mean?
Like, criminal is the.
what do you think about that?
That's the romantic part of me that kind of wants to say, yeah, what if we just won it with these? How special would it be to win behind RJ Barrett and Manu Quickly and Mitchell, like. Mitchell Robinson, to me, epitomizes this, right? Because for his entire career, he's been this goofy guy, right? Like, you know, he's like, his trainer posts stupid shit on Instagram. Mitch, like, and I think a lot of times, like, Mitch will post something about his role. Like, he likes to troll. He's like a little, I think eccentric might be the right word to use. He's a little bit eccentric. He's a little goofy. And I think we've often always confused that for, or conflated that. And I don't think without reason, because there's probably a high correlation between these two personality traits. Well, we've conflated that with a lack of seriousness. Whereas this is a guy that didn't play college ball, that came into the NBA ready to play 23 minutes a game and have a high impact. Did he foul too much? Yes. Was he by far probably the best player on that 2019 Knicks team? It depends how much slack you want to cut Randall for the fact that the first half of the season he had Fizdale. Second half, Randall did look pretty solid under Miller. It foreshadowed what was to come. But Mitch was the most impactful player, despite never playing college ball, despite being skinny as hell. And he kind of epitomizes like all of these young guys. They just get better every year. They're dedicated, even when it doesn't always seem like on the surface, this is like, this is in some ways an island of misfit toys, right? We got the third player in a two, in what was considered a two-person draft, right? That, oh my God, like that asshole Jorge Sedano. God, I hate that fucking guy. You, there's a clip of him just laughing when we lose the lottery, when we get the third pick. And he's just like, he looks like he's having a fucking orgasm. What a piece of shit. And on TV doing, that's a complete unprofessional, right? And that's how it was thought of. And RJ has struggled. He's had his ups and downs. He didn't have the blinding speed and crazy unfair athleticism that Ja Morant did. He didn't have just the Greek god abilities of Zion Williamson, right?
He also did not have a team bring him in on day one and say, you know what, whatever you need, take the ball. Everything is.
And that might be a good thing, you. By the way, because guess what? The other two players got that, and one of them were having questions about buying in. The other one is prematurely shooting guns off everywhere. Apparently, if you look at Zion's social media, he is too, but in a different way. So, like, quickly, 25th pick.
Street fight too.
What?
He just got in a street fight too. Yeah.
Zion?
Yep.
I'm really curious who would be that stupid to pick a street fight with. Even if Zion wasn't surrounded by bodyguards, that's like one of the last dudes in the NBA. I would be like, I want to fight that guy.
Alcohol is a hell of a drug, man.
I think Zion and Ja will both be okay. But the point is, RJ has come in. We've never had any questions of professionalism. We've had a lot of questions about his game, and he's just answered them all quickly, right? Not a real point guard. That we've heard that for several years. You wrote a great recap where it's like, that shit needs to die now. He's gotten better every year. He's faced a lot of scrutiny. He was put in a position, people talk about the bad playoffs. He was like, the fact that a 22-year-old like Quickly was put in that position so early where he's relied on to do so much, that says more about how far they've come, right? Now, if he's doing this at 26 and he's still a playoff liability, we can talk about that. But it's to your point, and it's all of these guys, Deuce, right? Deuce came in yesterday. He was just a menace. The shooting is coming around.
Look very comfortable.
And these are not the guys we're supposed to get. We'll still hear people scream, we don't have any wings besides RJ. We're not taking a shot on like the star level players. But they just keep adding good players. They keep adding guys like DiVincenzo and Hart and Hartenstein. How easy would it have been for Hartenstein to start mouthing off to the media last year? He wasn't used properly. He was injured. He was taking a lot of criticism. There were people that wanted him bench for Sims. He's turned that out around. And the only reason he's in starting is because he's playing against the guy who's just a historically good rebounder. He'd be starting on a lot of teams. And he has never, like, all of these guys have done exact. So from the romantic part of any fan would be like, I want to see this team win. And it may make logical sense, too, at this point, right? One guy the Knicks are tied to a lot is Karl-Anthony Towns. You mentioned a 4-for-120 for Emmanuel Quickley. Let's say they're paying $50 million next year to Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett. Mm-hmm. Would you rather pay Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett $50 million?
Yep.
Or Karl-Anthony Towns $60 million?
You know the answer.
Usually the conventional wisdom has been you would rather have $1 than four quarters, right? Consolidate. Right.
But $2.50 is pretty nice.
And everyone's getting paid a ton of money. Like, yep. I would rather have both of those guys than Jaylen Brown. I mean,
Sticker shock still hits us like 30 mil does not mean what 30 mil has meant. There's still this initial like Quickly 30 million, but this is not your father's 30 million. This is with a new cap, the new negotiations are going to jack it up more. 30 million is going to be nothing.
You trade for a guy like Kat. Now you not only giving him 60 million, it's the same cost problems. Even if I was to say, well, he's a star, so he's better than Quickly and Barrett put together, which I don't think so. And then you've lost all your picks and your flexibility. And then you have to worry about, so like if you're getting a $60 million guy, because anyone can get $60 million now, you have to, and teams are incentivized to keep their guys because it does cost picks. Are you getting, I mean, who are the, like, you told me we're trading the farm for Devin Booker. I'd say yes. Devin Booker, I think, is my Mendoza line for like the star trade.
Yes.
Like where it, that's the worst, and I say worst possible player. He's an amazing player, so that's why I'm saying I would trade the farm for him. But nobody, like, I'm not trading it for Donovan. Not for, I mean, LaVine, we'll see. If we can get him at a super discount, fine. But even the way RJ is playing, I don't even want to trade for LaVine at this point.
There's no one in this rotation. Literally, I don't think there's anyone in the rotation. There's no one in the rotation I would rather give minutes to LaVine. Because at least DiVincenzo, I know, will get steals and things like that.
That is probably a little bit PK to rate, I think.
Maybe.
But answer your question, I think it would be super fun to just to play this out. And then, will I be disappointed if ultimately this team ages, Randall gets old, we have to, you know, it becomes the 90s Knicks, but they never make it past the second round or whatever? I'll be disappointed. But, you know, there's also part of me that will wonder, what if like, I'll also be disappointed if we trade for Cat or something. And it's still the same, like, because I've seen that in my lifetime. It's called, we traded for Carmelo Anthony and tried to pair him with Amari. And I think that Gallinari Chandler Fields team as it was going to make a championship? No, but I think that's the best parallel to draw, right? Remember that 2011 season?
Oh, yeah. Like,
at first half, Gallinari, it clicked, right? It was not quite this RJ Barrett lead, but a lot of the things that had plagued him, even his defense looked a lot better that year.
Yeah.
Felton and the D'Antoni offense, I don't want to say it was a revelation, but it was like, oh, you know, we talk about Brunson's been the first point guard we've had. We've never had I remember that's how I felt that year a little bit with Raven Felton. You know, he wasn't a great point guard, but he ran D'Antoni's offense quite well. He could pull up, shoot. He wasn't Chris Duhon. You know, Chandler, Fields was a revelation for half the year that year. I don't know what happened to his shot. Mm-hmm. So is there part, do I think that team would win a championship? No. Is there part of me that's like, I would have liked to see more of them, right? That's when we traded. I was like, we got Carmelo Anthony. I love this dude, but we closed the page on like, remember that Amari Stoudemire game where he hit the three?
It was Boston. It was right after the buzzer.
That was the first time in a long time I could feel just like hating, like just being so mad about a loss. And it was Boston. And it was Paul Pierce's smug ass.
Yep.
And we should have won that game. And that was also a game where you realize the Knicks are kind of good. You know, the Knicks are back. And Amari's and I think this is – but I also think this is a much better team than that one. As good as Amari Stoudemire was, and as much as I criticized Julius Randle, if Julius Randle's worst part of his game is defense, I got news for you. He's way better than Amari Stoudemire. You know, at point guard, obviously, everywhere you go, right? RJ, I think, is better than Gallinari. I think Grimes and Chandler, you know, different strengths. But the point is, like, there's definitely reason to believe this team can do it, especially with the new salary cap rules, and especially with how just kind of how much parity there is at the top, right? Like, Jokic is a phenomenal player. Jokic and Giannis are as good as they are. And so is, I'm forgetting someone. Oh, Steph. Steph is aging. So there is no one in the league who transforms and just takes away your hope the way Jordan or Kobe or LeBron in this prime did. That's something like, and that's not a knock on Jokic. Those are all top 5 or 10 players of all time. That's another thing that I think is worth considering. Do you need to push for that star when there isn't really a team that just ends your hopes without one the way those guys did?
I'm starting to feel that Jokic does that. I watched him play a game against someone. They were on TV a week ago. The Clippers. And the Clippers kept playing him one-on-one with, like, Paul George. And he's taking it the whole quarter. They're playing him one-on-one. It's a tight game, and in the last minute, he's got the ball like around the baseline corner, 3-point corner. They finally double, and the moment they double, like, he finds Gordon underneath for the dunk, like, and so he's just, to me, that's that level where you're like, if you're a fan, like, there's just nothing but exasperation because there's nothing you can do. Like, there's
like
literally
Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, there's literally that's the he's, it's not at all the same level. But that's the Jordan quality in terms of, like, there's nothing you can do. Even if you do everything right, you know, Kobe had that. There's nothing you can do. Like, it doesn't matter. Worth considering as you're making this point, especially when we contrast this to 2011, had the Knicks not made, like, if you, let's say the Knicks held on and didn't make the Melo deal, they could have very easily lost in the first round the same way they did after the Melo deal. They could have very easily the next year lost in the first round the way they did. So that's another reason to say you didn't just give up. Like, you gave up a lot. I want to ask you
even Mozgov. I liked a lot of that team.
Mozgov was like the heart and soul of his time. He was good, man. I always remember he got one of the giant post 2016 balloon contracts. And I was like, God bless you, Timofey Mozgov.
Well, that was the side note on that is that was why I was like actually proud of Phil Jackson for like 2 weeks. No, that was for a year. Because I think that was the summer he signed Robin Lopez.
Yes.
And I was like, that's a really good deal if Mozgov is getting 65. And then he just...
The Rolo trade was the first... The Lopez trade was like the moment in the horror movie where the kid first realizes that like the old man maybe is not what you thought he was. Like, that was my first, wait a minute, Phil. And then from then on, it was like... Dun, 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 dun.
And I talked myself into Derrick Rose, but there was, even on PNT, there were articles, there was like, Derrick Rose had a resurgence, but he doesn't draw fouls anymore. That's probably not a good thing. And I was like, no, he's Derrick Rose. We got an MVP. We got a former MVP. And it was...
I want to close from my end with asking you about a completely non-roster-related story that happened. And there's just one part of it that I find... So there's a common reaction. There's the Mark Jackson story where Mark Jackson was going to be calling road games because I think Clyde is basically taking the year off from the road. But according to what I've read, it was Leon Rose.
Well, Mark Jackson
Mark Jackson would not be permitted to fly on the team flight. He'd have to fly commercial. And that Jackson, upon hearing that, made a decision that he was no longer interested in the job. Backstory one is, I think his name is Darren Erman, who was an assistant in Golden State when Mark Jackson was the head coach, which, we mentioned Richard Nixon earlier, came to an end with a lot of recordings and illegal stuff, and Jackson being, basically, I guess Erman recorded things that were used against Jackson later. Jackson, irate, to know that he was being recorded by a head coach. I don't even care about that. My only interest in this story is... forgetting all that, the idea that like the Knicks just as an organization, don't you feel like the Knicks as an organization, if they hire you to be their play-by-play person and travel on the road and follow the team, that they would put you up in first class instead of saying that Mark Jackson has to get his own tickets and coach and like fly? I mean, they didn't tell him he has to get coach, but like they didn't offer him. Does it seem extremely petty and broke to you that the New York Knickerbockers want their analysts flying around the country, possibly coach, paying for their own shit, paying for hotels and stuff too?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, do you think Clyde has to? And Brian?
No, right? That's what I'm saying.
Well,
something here doesn't ring right. Either Jackson specific, or something's weird here because what the Knicks have a vibe, whatever you think of James Dolan. I have never gotten the sense that he's like low quality on what he does, like ever.
I think if we take a step back, as you grow older and you get out of some of the good versus evil narratives, you realize that Dolan is bad in many ways, or, you know, there are negative qualities to Dolan that are not unique to James Dolan. They apply to every single owner because I think one of the harder truths that I've learned as I've grown older is there's very few billionaires who are, let's put it like this. Everyone who owns an NBA team is a billionaire with a ton of money. And a lot of the times that leads to certain traits, right? That are not good. And I think that applies as much to Dolan as it applies to people like Mark Cuban, as it applies to, I think they've kicked out one owner, and I don't think Dolan is that, right? But, you know, so getting back to, so my point is that, like, a lot of the criticism of Dolan is fair. I think it exists for every owner. Every owner is kind of an egomaniac. Every owner has a ton of power. And I think with great power comes great insecurity, not responsibility, also responsibility, but
ideally responsibility.
When you have something to lose, you're insecure. And they all are like that to some extent. And I think Dolan kind of is just in that group. We also just lost for 20 years. That was part of it. And he's hired some of the wrong people. We can get into that, right? I think the, harassment lawsuits and all that also really, really bad. Again, not unique to the Knicks. And that's not to defend them. That is to say that if we look at James Dolan, he is, and that doesn't justify it, doesn't mean you shouldn't criticize James Dolan. I am saying that he is like most NBA owners. When it comes to the Mark Jackson news, one, I'll just admit it. I'm not biased in favor of Mark Jackson. I find his commentary often to be very annoying. I think that Golden State hit it. Like, there's so many people who are like, Steve Kerr was just profiting off of Mark Jackson's development. Watch their offense and tell me that if you have Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, you could not run a more unimaginable offense. He tried to heal Steph Curry's ankle with holy water. He has a history of he's made homophobic comments and stuff in the past. All that to say, to your point,
the best part of Mark Jackson was his now passed on brother, an N1 star.
Yeah, I think if you want to come down on the Knicks as a $1 billion corporation making someone fly coach, totally get that. But I'm not shedding many tears. I think we know that this organization has its quirks. Could they handle the media better? Yes. It's like that, right? Like, on the one hand, should they probably have a more open access policy? Yeah. Do I think people like Stephen Bondi or, do I think that the majority of people, I like Begley a lot. Katz to me can be hit or miss, but I think he is intellectually honest, if nothing else. I think that the vast majority of media, though, I'm not shedding any tears for them. I will say that, yes, I'm for freedom of information. I'm for access. I also just I'm not interested in the 1,000th piece about how Knicks fans should fucking kill themselves and are bad people and how they're never going to win anything. And just, LOL Knicks. I'm over that. And I don't have much sympathy for people who make a living like that. But with Jackson, like, it's the same thing. It's like, one, probably should have figured out a way for them to, like, just make peace with Ehrman, figure out a way to make the situation work. On the other hand, if the trade-off is I get Gus Johnson calling Knicks games instead of Mark Jackson, I mean, because I told you I'm a Michigan fan. The last 2 years, I got to not only watch Michigan win, I got to watch Gus Johnson call the game, and that has been incredible. He's a Detroit native. And he's called Knicks. He has, like, that is my guy. Aside from Breen and Clyde, I don't know that there's a sports scholarship. I mean, I'm probably taking over Breen even at this point. Breen's got the bank call of late. He's been a little bit, Breen has been like a little bit like, yeah, we get it, dude. You have to like make the referee's point because we all hate him. But like sometimes you can just admit it was a bad call. I love Gus. So if that's the alternative, if Gus Johnson is calling games instead of Mark Jackson, my take is more, kind of like Willy Wonka, like, wait, no, come back.
Gus is dope. I love Gus. But Jackson, so last question, because Jackson would have been replacement for Zerbiak. Who would you rather hear? Because he's the play-by-play. Who would you rather, the analyst, who would you rather hear less on a broadcast, Jackson or Zerbiak?
Who would you rather have a point guard, Ramon Sessions or Jared Jack? I don't honestly Jared Jack caught a lot of flack for
starting. Jared Jack got at least one triple double as a Knick. I'm gonna give him that.
And one of the funniest gifts ever. And I thought he was a good vet in that. There's just a shitty team. It's not his fault. Mm-hmm. I would have liked Nolikina to get minutes at the time, but I never had a real issue with Jared Jack.
Charlotte's Frank Nolikina.
I think Mark Jackson's a better play-by-play guy. With Zerbiak, when he gets the call with Van Gundy. And that's the guy I wanted them to get anyway. Like, Van Gundy, I mean, Gus is awesome. I didn't think Gus would be available, especially during college football season. But but Van Gundy, like, I like Van Gundy's grading in like Van Gundy is like that friend you watch games with, and they just say the thing that you're just like, I just don't want to hear this right now, but it's true. It's like Chris Collinsworth a little bit. Whereas Jackson's a good compliment. Jackson will say some funny shit sometimes.
It does.
Wally's just like, you never know what to expect. And sometimes it's insightful and sometimes it very much isn't. So
he said something in the first half that was like actually, like it was like good, and I was like, I think I'm too hard on Wally. Like that was like a night, and then it literally took seconds for me to be like, oh no, okay, Wally's Wally. I agree, Jackson. At least I think sometimes it's funny. I can't say Zerbiak is at best inoffensive, and is often not at his best. So,
you know who I kind of am curious to see if he calls a game. Someone who's been a nemesis, I think, for Knicks fans, and now is making decent points, is Richard Jefferson.
Because he
started out as this guy that always poo-pooed the Knicks, and this is just because I think he's just a very calculated person. He has now pivoted to this thing where it's like, he had that interview, he's like, I don't hate the Knicks, y'all hate y'all. He's now leaned into that because he knows the Knicks are actually good. So it's not going to help him to just clown them all the time. So now you see him and he's like, why are you guys complaining? You're not a bad team. But that is true because we probably all are complaining a little bit too much about, I think this is the best team they've had this century. So sorry.
The Knicks recently played, it had to be Cleveland. No. Who's the team that has Tristan Thompson now?
I think it was Cleveland, right? Or was it Boston?
No, not Boston. Maybe it was Cleveland. Somebody has Tristan Thompson. I saw him in a game recently.
Yeah, it was Cleveland. Yeah.
Cleveland? Okay. Yeah. Anytime I see Tristan Thompson's face, I'm just being honest. Anytime I see his face, all I can think of is like this guy like cheated on his wife, I think, when she was like having their baby or something. Like, it's all I can think of. It's all I can think of when I see his face. All I can think of when I see Richard Jefferson's face is him and Kenyon and Kidd just like bullying the Knicks and Richard Jefferson leaving some woman at the altar. Like, I don't know what the reasons are. She might not have been cool. Like, it's his life. It doesn't matter. But I will never, ever, ever, ever accept Richard Jefferson at all, ever. He could become the GOAT announcer. He could buy the Knicks and make them the greatest thing. I can't have Richard Jefferson in my life. I just cannot. I cannot.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I didn't know about that story. I know about. All right. I know way too much about Matt Barnes and Derek Fisher. But
did you see the video recently of Fisher coaching Barnes' kids?
I posted it on the Strict Court. I mean, I will give Matt Barnes credit. Like, I think he's buried the hatchet
for not assaulting Derek Fisher again.
No, they've actually, I think, are like Barnes was at that game, and it's one thing to make a joke, but I think it's commendable, and more men should just be willing to, you know, put their kids and their family first, right? So. Obviously, like I commend Barnes for that, but I think it's just because of who he is and all of the shit that he's like Kwame Brown is MAGA and like probably kind of an asshole and not someone I'd agree with. But did I laugh during that whole ordeal? You're damn right I did. Like, I thought it was hilarious, you know. So it's funny the things that you find out about, and I mean they're millionaires with a lot of ability to do kind of whatever they want. So you see a lot of this shit.
Former Knick greats Matt Barnes and Derek Fisher, head coach Derek Fisher. That's
great.
It.
Great, he's doing a lot of work.
That's true. That is true. He did a little too much work in his time there. That's all for this episode of I Believe in Knicks podcast. We are presented by Bet Online, also presented by me and Stacey. Knicks play next on Monday at Minnesota. Then they'll play Friday at home in an in-season tournament game against Miami. And then the following Sunday, they'll host Phoenix. Bradley Beal will be out, but hopefully Booker and KD will be healthy and playing in that game. So that's all for now. Until then, everybody, enjoy your Thanksgiving-ish time. We will talk to you soon.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you,
Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at weeks 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB, serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
What kind of day is it? It's a White Claw day. Light and refreshing tasting, uniquely cold way filtered. There's an iconic flavor for everyone. Come on, grab a pack. White Claw. Grab life by the claw. Please drink responsibly. Hard seltzer with flavor. White Claw seltzer works Chicago, Illinois.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.